Okay. So.
Andres, since you haven't been here for a while, why don't you jump in?
Okay. We're doing transformation series with a small group, and my question is, the ice versus kings, what's the difference in that?
Okay, yeah. Well, the kings were the kings of the different Ite nations, Moabites, Ammonites, you know, all the different Ite nations. So the nations themselves had certain characteristics, and they had certain idols and certain gods and different things. The kings were actually the rulers of those nations. So think of it in terms of rulers and principalities, or rulers and in the heavens, in the atmosphere now, different spiritual outworkings. So the kings were, at that point, obviously were physical kings, but they were actually spiritual beings, if you think of it in now terms. And, you know, those kings were of the Nephilim or the Rephaim or the different races of giants, because those giants were in the land. So, and they represent inherited characteristics that we have inherited from our generational lines that got them from all those original characteristics of those. The enemy's plan was obviously to pollute the earth with the characteristics of those nations in the place of promise that God promised them to occupy. That's why they were all set up in that area, concentrated there. And you know, if you look at it into our lives, then you know, we have to look at what are the characteristics that the enemy has occupied in our lives to hinder the flow of heaven coming to earth, really, through those areas. That's really what it's representing. You know, Ian's teaching on it, goes into it in a little bit more detail and stuff. But if you know, if you do some history of some of those nations, then you'll find the characteristics. Some of them were very violent. Some of them were more sexual characteristics. You know, they were just different sort of cultural things. And you can look around different cities today, and you could see that those cities are ruled and governed differently. Particularly in your nation, you obviously got different states with governors, if you like, who operate differently. And you also have sort of cultural characteristics that different areas have. You know, and those things can have a negative effect on people and influence people. And same way in a spiritual way, the representations spiritually of those nations and those kings have a rulership and a cultural effect in our lives, if you like, which is why we need to make sure that we're clear from them in our bloodline and making sure that they're not affecting us in any way.
Yeah. And you had a diagram on there that had like level of soul and spirit.
Yeah.
And I had my soul or kings at her spirit. Can you explain that a little more?
Well, it's the same way, again, in the same way that kings rule and establish the government into something, and the cultural aspects of what that area is or what that nation is outworked in the people. So the spiritual, let's say familiar spirits, or if I want them a better term, that are associated with our lives will outwork themselves through the characteristics of our nature, of our soul. And so the outworking of things is in soul characteristics, but it's a spiritual force behind it. Hence, you know, if you have familiar spirits sat in your gates, within your soul gates, outside your spirit gates, they look to hinder or block or counterfeit, but they do it through the soul's characteristics. So, for instance, I mean, spiritual forces, let's call them demons, or unclean spirits, they outwork through a person's character and behavior, but they're spirits. The spirit in itself has nothing to do other than work through a person's character. So if someone's, let's say, a spirit of hatred, will cause the person or turbocharge their emotions towards hatred or this, you know, a spirit of anger towards anger, you know, a sexual spirit towards sexual behavior. And so they're outworked through the soul, but they're spiritual forces behind it. They don't have an effect on our spirit other than to block our spirit's influence and effect. Mm-hmm. So if they sit outside of our spirit gates, for instance, you know, if let's say we have our revelation gate or intuition gate, and we're looking to receive revelation and see that flowing in our lives, but in the past we may well have looked for that revelation through, let's say, horoscopes or through palm reading or whatever, then that gives the right for the enemy to occupy and outside of those gates to stop the flow of gates, because we've used an illegitimate way of trying to get revelation or insight, and so that gives authority. You know, it can't actually affect our spirit, because our spirit is in a sense eternal and is born again, but it can affect the soul, and it can look to block and hinder the flow of the spirit to yield the soul to come in back into unity and harmony and work together, which is the design, is always to separate and to divide. You know, so we have to make sure that there is no connections from our soul essentially blocking our spirit from flowing, which is, you know, why Ian Clayton talks about you know, separating soul and spirit, which in reality we don't want to separate our soul and spirit. We want to unify our soul and spirit so they become one in harmony, but we separate the negative control that the soul has, whether we call them soul ties or different things that look to be tied to our spiritual identity, and then hinder it or block it, really. So,
yeah. Okay. One more question on that. It seems like there's like different levels. Like here we just did deliverance. It seems like it's not our spirits, and like the kings and knights are kind of a different level. Are there different levels that you go up, like as if you're doing your mountain type of thing? Taking control of that, is that a part of it?
Yeah, I mean, there are different levels in that we deal with transformation in terms of the behavioral patterns and the coping mechanism on the outside, and then the thoughts and intentions of the heart, and then the motivation behind those thoughts and intentions, which may be seed line or bloodline issues. And therefore some of those things can be generational issues, which, you know, can epigenetically change our genetic makeup, or they can occupy positions of iniquity that, because of the power of iniquity to visit third, fourth generations and continue down family lines, you know, it's what Psalm 139 says about if there be any wicked or idolatrous way in me. So search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxious thoughts, and see if there's any wicked or idolatrous way in me. And so they would be wicked or idolatrous things which could be in our bloodline or seed line. And the difference really is between genetic and spiritual. So the kings, if you like, would be spiritual powers that operate within our bloodline, whereas seedline things are actual genetic seed from other sources, which may well be within parts of our DNA, and then we can obviously get that cleansed and resequenced. But there are different levels of effect, and there's different depths you have to go to uncover them. You know, it's quite difficult to find these things without first identifying the behaviors and the coping mechanisms and removing them, so that God can get into to reveal the thoughts and intentions of our heart. And then when we recognize those and repent and renounce those things and get them cleansed, then there's nothing for the enemy to hide behind anymore. because, you know, a king doesn't go out and fight. He sends out an army to do the fighting, and he's behind the scenes organizing things. And there are demonic schemes and strategies of the enemy against us, you know, which we have to identify and know those schemes and deal with them. So that, in a sense, we want to be able to say, as Jesus did, the enemy's got nothing in me. And then we can be coming from a position of righteousness and purity, and we'll be able to see God in a more intimate way, because it's our soul that hinders us engaging heaven and engaging God because of the nature it carries, and that's why it needs transformation and redefinition, really, into the image that God created us to be in, and that is to reflect the Spirit. So our spiritual image, which is coming from the thoughts of God about us, which came out of eternity and was that formed in His heart, is supposed to be reflected through our soul and body, and therefore our characteristics, our redemptive gifts, all those things are supposed to reflect the image of our soul out through our emotions and out through the way we do things. But if everything has been conform to an image that has come through our upbringing, whether it be trauma or different ways of being brought up, you know, in the sense of, you know, our parents have brought us up, we may live in a culture that affects us, but those are the things which have generally shaped us, and those are the things we must not be conformed to any longer, which is, you know, Romans 8 talks about being conformed to the predestined to be conformed to the image of Christ. And that doesn't mean to be like Him in appearance, but to be like Him as joint heirs, as sons of God, and therefore to be how we were created to be in the thoughts of God. And that should reflect out in everything we do and who we are. But we need process of transformation to ensure that we're not being influenced by those things that have come through nature or nurture or trauma, but basically our spirit is what brings us the revelation and the encoding, really, of who we really are from an eternal perspective.
Okay.
You got anything, Peter?
Yeah, I was trying to find my mute button there. I know you mentioned in several of the Hangouts recently about this geometric shape. And I started listening to your last Sunday message where I guess you talked about it. I was not able to watch the PDF while I was listening. Sounded like a diagram and stuff, but I have seen the cube, you know, like a six-sided thing, and I've seen that star of the kind of thing on a two-dimensional plane surrounding things.
Yeah.
My question is, when you see that, how do you engage with it? What are you supposed to do with that?
Yeah, you're asking something there. Well, I think because normally, you know, I wouldn't sort of give that much sort of thing to those sorts of things, and particularly something like Metatron's cube, which has, you know, a whole history of sort of mythological things and you know, what does it really mean and everything else, and obviously, you know, New Age people and others have taken hold of some of that, and it's like, oh yeah, this is this and that and the other, but of course they do counterfeit that which is real, and the shapes and the forms of geometry, I mean, everything that God has created is formed out of the golden mean or phi or Fibonacci number sequences. I mean, you know, God is the ultimate mathematician. You know, everything that, you know, people are now discovering, He already put into place. you know, all these guys with great big blackboards full of calculations and equations, they're just discovering what he put in as the laws of the natural laws, physical laws, spiritual laws, whichever you want to put it. They have those things behind them. Now, when it comes to those diagrams, those pictures, recently we've encountered them. I mean, that's really what got my interest. You know, we as a bench of 12, we went into heaven and we saw our scroll and our book, if you like, and we were looking at, okay, are there pages for the coming year that we need to see? And, you know, and four or five of us actually saw the same type of geometric patterns, and we tried to draw them, some more successful than others, but we were seeing from different perspectives. We weren't, you know, seeing it, because it isn't a one-dimensional, two-dimensional thing. It is a multi-dimensional thing. And it's to do with, you know, Metatron is the keykeeper and the timekeeper of heaven, and it's to do with governmental spheres and dimensions and how they interact. You know, you could say wisdom's heights, where the paths meet and where ancient ways are, and those type of things. They're intersections or point of dimensional connection. And so these diagrams and pictures are like that. I mean, I do have some that I can show you. And literally, they are shapes within shapes within shapes. You know, when you look at them, you can see a cube, but then when you look into it again, you can see the Star of David, and that's made up of overlapping triangles or actual symbols of mountains, effectively, if you think about it. You know, that's the benches of three or mountain authority. And you can see, and you know, in the when I actually did the presentation the last couple of weeks, you know, I animated the two triangles from the reflection of heaven on earth to overlap, and they form the Star of David, what we call it. But I mean, it's essentially a tetrangle, I think, of some sort. But that isn't a one-dimensional, two-dimensional thing. It goes into the dimensions of a sphere or a cube or into other understandings of it. And so we began to see, you know, what I began to see is into the center of it. And I was looking at, in a sense, the shape, which is the shape in the middle of that. And I was seeing that. And then I began to see, actually, yeah, we have had these pictures or pyramids and, you know, these things given to us prophetically. So I knew something was significant. And then when I was doing some hangouts, people began to say, oh, I've seen this, or I'm seeing this. And then one engagement on a Sunday morning in our worship, I ended up in this cube thing. I mean, you know, I ended up in a sapphire cube. And so I was like, okay, what is this? And it was just reflecting and refracting light. I mean, again, I've got a little bit of a picture that sort of shows some of it. And I was in that. And I was in there seeing these facets or manifold, multifaceted wisdom and grace. And I'm in the middle of it in an encounter thinking, where am I and what is all this about? So it certainly got me to pursue it somewhat to find out, you know, what it was trying to reveal. And, you know, then I discovered this whole thing of, you know, the tablets that God gave to Moses weren't tablets. They were a sapphire cube. You know, you have the we tend to read it from a Sunday school perspective of, well, he gave them, you know, some flat tablets with some things written on. No, he gave them a multidimensional cube that within it contained the revelation of how the protocols of heaven work dimensionally. And it contained a whole host of revelatory understandings of how God interacts and how we can interact with dimensions of the kingdom, you know. And again, you know, Moses went up and engaged on the sapphire pavement and was given this sapphire cube, which came from the throne, the sapphire throne of God, and so contains governmental things from the throne of God. And so that's really where some of the symbolism's coming from. You know, there are other sort of pictures of dimensional things that indicate the spheres of government that are attached to the four corners, and are also attached to different dimensions when you look into that, the three. So for me, it came out with a whole series of threes and fours, and how threes and fours engage together. Because you can get 3 + 4 makes 7, of course, but you can get 3 × 4 makes 12, and you can get 4 × 3 that makes 12, which is the fullness of government. You can get 3 × 3, which is 9, which is the fullness of the number of God, but actually is not the fullness of government, because God has included us as a 3 into his government. So, you know, ultimately, you know, there are other things that you can sort of look at this, and there are dimensional connections to some of these things that, you know, people have, and, you know, and it depends really what you're looking at to what you're engaging with in terms of government, and just how those governments sort of work out in dimensional spheres of influence, you know. So, you know, I think I'm talking about the 7 spirits of God, I think, this week, just to finish off that whole thing of the pattern of the angels, because we're engaging with the 7 spirits of God, and through, you know, colored flags and through the colored dimensions of that. So I've never taught it, so I'm going to teach it, just so that people get a better understanding of it this Sunday. But I'm going to show some of those sort of pictures just as, look, you know, stuff is going on. So if you see this, any of these things, or you know, start to engage with any of these things, then it's an indication that you're being shown dimensions of the kingdom and how some of the protocols are going to work dimensionally in those numbers. And as I've pursued it, then I've engaged then with the order of the 12 houses of God and how they're ordered in heaven, and I've now have understanding of that, because I've sought out how they were patterned. And they're patterned in 4 threes and 3 fours. And interestingly enough, there was a link on one of the Facebook pages from a scientific talk on the TED network thing about how all the forces of the universe are aligned, and they, you know, not to go into the science of it, but basically they were talking about the 8-dimensional forces that are within the fabric of everything, and when you spin them, they actually form the same Metatron's cube shape of dimensions, where all the forces that hold everything together are patterned after, which I guess you'd expect, because they're patterned after the things that God's created. But it was interesting, because it wasn't a Christian talk. It was just a scientist who was giving this talk with some illustrations and diagrams and spinning around the different forces and different particles and how they formed. And hey, lo and behold, out comes this diagram of these spheres all connected up into this pattern. So I thought, well, okay, yeah, there's science is actually discovering that there's more to some of these geometrics, and people call them sacred geometry and different names for it, but it's definitely very much about the dimensions of kingdom government, and the revelation we need to know in able to bring government and rule and dominion.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Yeah.
Speaking of government, I guess I wanted to ask a question about Ecclesia. And that being is, you know, there's the one church, which is the church or Ecclesia in heaven and on earth. But then there's like the local ecclesia, or a specific, you know, an ecclesia that has a specific function for why it's put together. Can you kind of explain that difference? Because there seems to be a lot of confusion about that, or not understanding that, and how, you know, especially here in the States, I don't know if it's that much over there, people tend to go to a lot of different, you know, meetings of different churches or different groups. And I know you've talked about how with an ecclesia, you really, there has to be like a focus.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, this is, to me, it's a, you know, it's a sort of hot topic, I guess, in terms of what's going on. Yeah, there is the general assembly of the church, which is heavenly, it's a cloud of witnesses, who are the heavenly aspect of the fullness of God's people, if you like. And they're as much part of church as we are. They're just operating in that realm. Then we're supposed to operate in that realm as well. So, you know, but when it comes down to, you know, there is a lot of negative things about church, you know, which is why I think people are starting to use ecclesia, because it's the Greek word, because the word church is an Anglo-Saxon word that actually doesn't mean what the Greek word meant. And so it has negative connotations with a lot of people. And hence people do hop from places to places because they've not understood how they're supposed to be living stones around a blueprint which has come out of heaven. And so, in a sense, everything that's in the universal church, let's say, has a pattern which is a blueprint and God's blueprint for everything. You know, it's Ephesians 3 says it's through the church that the manifold wisdom of God will be made known to the different spiritual forces through the church. And Jesus said, you know, I will build my church. Well, okay, let's say, yes, he said, I will build my ecclesia. And, you know, it says it's through the ecclesia, because that's the actual Greek word that's actually used. And it has a totally different meaning. It's not a building, you know, it's people gathered together, and they have to be gathered around a purpose, which is a apostolic blueprint which comes with a bench of three. And if we're looking at what the heavenly pattern is, rather than, okay, what the perversion of it has ended up through history, you know, and you go back through history and you can see what it started like, and then it got politicized, and then Constantine threw his two pennies worth in, and then you had the Dark Ages where the whole thing was a political system to control people. You know, I mean, it's just a mess. You know, so when all our forms of church government and all that stuff that was very simple in the beginning, based around the kohal, or the community, who gathered together around a bench of three with seven to form that community which had a purpose. And it's the purpose that's the key. You can't have a bench of three without a blueprint, because the bench of three forms around the blueprint. The blueprint gives you the plan and structure and the purpose of God spiritually for that gathering of people that will be drawn to the blueprint. And so take it from the whole thing of, you know, again, in heaven you have God's blueprint, and let's say he has a blueprint for the whole thing, and therefore all of us, every single expression, every single Christian throughout the whole world is part of that blueprint. And if you, again, look at it and think of it from the perspective of the pattern of government in heaven, you know, we have, let's say, a blueprint that's in the realms of heaven, and that blueprint in the realms of heaven with the bench of three, Father, Son, and Spirit, who are light shine on that blueprint to reveal a shadow of that blueprint on the Earth. Now, you can think of that in its global sense, that sort of shadow is supposed to be filled by every expression of every Christian and every gathering of Christians around the world. Are all part of fulfilling that blueprint, and they're all living stones within that overall blueprint. But we know God operates fractally, so everything is patterned after the same. So yes, that is the global, but also you will have that maybe for a nation. There may be a blueprint for a nation. There may be a blueprint for a region, for a city, for an area, right down to a blueprint for a group of people who are gathered together. They will fit into that overall blueprint because it's God's intention that all his people work together to fulfill his kingdom purpose. But they will have very specific roles according to the blueprint or the scroll which represents them. Now, it still has to have exactly the same thing. Bench of three in heaven, blueprint from there, the light producing a shadow, and then on earth, the reflection of that mountain or that authority, which then releases people to find and fulfill their destiny within the blueprint. And therefore, many people who are hopping around from place to place are probably looking for somewhere where they fit. They're looking for, does my destiny resonate with the vision or the blueprint or the shadow of this place? And if those places have no blueprints, they have no government which is established after the pattern of heaven, then they're not going to find it. Ultimately, they may well be part of an institution. They may well be part of an old order of things who are still operating in that old order, but they're not going to find it if they don't find something that looks like heaven on earth. And that's why people are searching. They're looking for something. They're looking for their destiny, and they're looking for a place where their destiny can be outworked with others in unity and relationship, coming together for that blueprint. And so, you know, you don't want people who are not part of the blueprint. I'm not saying you don't have a relationship with them, or you don't have anything to do with them in sense of equipping or helping them in other ways, but you really want to see who are the living stones that are to occupy that shadow and to build together in relationship. But the relationships are not just, oh well, we like each other. You know, yes, it's great, it's all based on love, but it's based around a purpose. It's about government. You know, when Jesus said, I will build my ecclesia and the gates of hell will not prevail against it, he was talking about a battle. He was talking about a fight. He was talking about government, establishing the kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. So, you know, the blueprints in these things, you know, we need on earth benches of three. Our lives are, of course, have a blueprint. So you could say ultimately, in terms of God is the Father, Son, and Spirit over our life, and he's given me a blueprint in my life that has a shadow on earth that I need to express and outwork. And then as my body, soul, and spirit come together in agreement with that as a bench of three in my own life, then that can be outworked through being that reflection, being in the image of Christ, if you like, on the earth. The same would apply to an ecclesia of people who are called to gather together around the blueprint and called to outwork that blueprint on earth as it is in heaven. So to me, you cannot have an ecclesia without a blueprint, and you cannot have an ecclesia without government. And now, many things that are called ecclesias or churches, God is going to disown, because actually they are not. They are not looking like him, and what his grace has been available on them so that they can pursue becoming like him, I think we're going to see in this next season a whole host of things where God says that doesn't look like me. Now, he's not going to do that to people who have no understanding or no idea what we're talking about. He's going to challenge people who have revelation and are rejecting him. Those that want to have their own system, those that are not willing to change their governmental perspective to change and be like God, but they know that there is a river to cross and a new place, but they don't want to do it. Just like the generation that stayed in the wilderness, and even those that saw some of it, some of them decided they weren't going to live in the land. So that is coming. So when it comes to Ecclesia, you know, it will be bandied around a lot. And if you are to be a living stone whose destiny is to be outworked in that Ecclesia, then you will no doubt have the mountains of your life that will connect and associate with the mountains, the seven mountains, or spheres of government that Ecclesia has. Because each Ecclesia will have seven spheres of government, seven mountains, that they have to administer and begin to bring the government of God through. And so you'll find that people will be drawn to the resonance, the frequency, the sound that's being released from the blueprint and from the bench of three who carry that within their hearts, that people will be drawn to that. If people think, well, I want to be part of two or three ecclesia and it's okay because I can just do that, actually they don't understand what an ecclesia is. There's a commitment that needs to take place for you to be a living stone joined to other people to fulfill an outworking of that shadow of the blueprint. You can't be unaccountable and, well, I can just drift wherever I like. You need to be committed. And therefore, those that say, well, I'm part of three ecclesias and I go here for this and I go here for that, really, they don't understand. And what they're probably doing is connecting with three groups that none of them are actually ecclesias from a heavenly perspective. They may be people who are gathered, but people gathering together is not an ecclesia. Just because you gather doesn't make you an ecclesia. For a start, you have to have a bench of three and you have to have seven to form 10. No ecclesia can actually form without 10, in essence. So just two or three people are not an ecclesia. They can begin the process of forming an ecclesia by getting a blueprint and a mandate, and then begin to outwork that by releasing the sound to draw other people. And, you know, I'm not, you know, our you know, vision statement or mission statement as an ecclesia here is to help people find and fulfill their destiny. But those people who are going to come across our path and want to be part of our ecclesia here, whether locally here or whether around the world and just want to be part of it because they resonate with it, all that does is it helps people to see where they would outwork their destiny within that blueprint. And if they're not part of that blueprint, well, then they won't really resonate with it. They may well resonate with a person, or they might like a person, or they may be drawn to something because it's got some good worship or something like that, but that isn't the reason for being part of a church and being part of an ecclesia. You don't go because it's got good children's work, or, you know, it's got good worship, or it's got good teaching. You go because your destiny is resonating with the vision that blueprint has. That's what you make your decisions on, not on whether you like it or not, not on whether it's comfortable or not, not on any of those things. It's about, do I resonate with this blueprint? Can I fulfill my destiny here? And there are many people who are in institutional places who will never fulfill their destiny unless they get out. Because just like Jacob, his destiny was under the open heaven of Bethel. And when he refused to stay in Bethel and outwork his destiny, and he chose to leave because of expediency, because he needed pasture for his flocks, and there was none up on the hills and up on the mountains, then he then basically cursed his family. And everything that happened with his family and all the stuff that happened subsequently was a result of him in that place. And there are many people who are in the wrong places, and you cannot fulfill your destiny if you're in the wrong place. If your destiny is associated with a vision for a city or a region, and you're not there, then you can't fulfill it. I'm not saying that there cannot be spiritual destinies that can be connected virtually, if you like, in terms of some of the stuff we're doing, but you still have to be a part of that, because that vision will have a global vision. You know, if you just have an ecclesia which has a vision for a square mile, and your vision is for a continent, then you're going to struggle to outwork that, and to be understood, and to be supported and encouraged in the outworking of your vision. And so so many people are stuck. And I know the loyalty issues, and I know the friendship issues. We should not be basing our decisions on where we are outworking the purposes of God on friendships. You know, those friendships, yeah, it's great to have friends, but you can have friends with people who are not even Christians. You know, you can have friends, but in reality we're looking for relationships which are joined together. Because when the going gets tough, you need to know who the person is beside you. And look at it from like Nehemiah and building the walls. You know, they needed to know who they could blow the trumpet and people would come rallying. You know, they had a sword in one hand and a trowel in the other, and they had parts to play in rebuilding the walls, and there were groups that worked together in a particular function. And so there are many groups, we would call them ecclesias or gatherings, that are part of the overall ecclesia, and they are fulfilling their function in it. And there are many groups who aren't. And I would not advise anyone to be in a group that isn't in what's coming. And if people are, don't be trapped by loyalty. Don't be trapped by generational history. Don't be trapped by other things to staying somewhere where your destiny is not associated with. And if people are in churches or in places or institutions that do not reflect patterns of heaven, then go and find somewhere that does. And I know people will say, yeah, but I'm supposed to change it from within. Great. If you have the authority to do that, and you have the influence to do it, and you're part of an eldership or you're part of a leadership that is looking to transition into a new order, great. Brilliant. Stick at it and work through the process. You know, as I'm looking to help people to transition churches and groups into this new order and dimension of things. But if you're someone who normally just sits in the pew and does your bit on a Sunday, or does a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and you've got no influence, then, to be honest, you're on a hide into nothing. And by trying to change something against the wishes of the leadership, actually you're in danger of manipulating things. So it's better to actually say, God, lead me to the right place. Let my spirit resonate out there, and let me connect with those who my destiny is connected with. Doesn't mean I don't have to break relationship with people or whatever, but we're looking at this from an eternal perspective. And if we want an eternal reward of outworking our destiny and being faithful, then we need to be in the right place to do it. You know, whether that's a physical place or a spiritual place, we need to be in the right place, because that is where we'll be accountable for what we do. You know, so, you know, there's a whole thing around this, whatever. You know, some people will be using the term very loosely, because they're frightened of commitment and responsibility and accountability. And some people will be using it actually very rigidly to reinforce an old pattern of what it should be. We must be those who embrace it from a point of our spirit and in destiny, and connect together as living stones in relationship, absolutely. Culture of honor, based in love, supporting, helping each other, you know, but to outwork God's overall purpose in fulfilling the role that that has within the larger sphere of things. You know, and some ecclesias may have a 1 square mile thing where their everlasting doors is engaged. Some may have a much wider, and those that are called to establish cities of refuge will have a major governmental role to play in shaping the history of cities and areas. And some people, that's what their destiny is, you know. But that will be part of their blueprint that then they will look to work to outreach. They're not going to do it in day one, but it will be part of the DNA that drives them, that motivates them, that creates the pattern and shape of everything that they do, because it's about growing into and filling that shadow so that that shadow can be fully functional. Really.
Very good. Thanks, Mike.
Okay.
Wow, that's pretty intense.
Yeah. Because
it's great. I mean, it's really good. I'm sitting here thinking, well, a lot of people in my area are displaced. We, you know, everybody's looking for that. They may not have the condition or language. But where do you start if it really isn't a place?
Well, sure. But you well, some of it is you have to. You have to ask, am I called to establish a blueprint? You know, do I carry within me the government of God to form that blueprint or to receive that blueprint and begin to outwork it? Because somebody has to stand up and say, this is my destiny. I am hearing what God's saying. I carry this blueprint for whatever it might be in my heart, and I'm going to start releasing that blueprint. How do I do it? Well, I do it around my mountain, from my mountain, and I start declaring and calling people together, and then I go and get a strategy for what God might want to do. And God will send the people, and they'll start connecting, and you'll find that's where it starts. You know, God will have a plan and purpose for every single ecclesia that he wants to establish. And he will have a way of forming that, and it will be through relational connections around somebody who has a apostolic call, a heavenly one, not an earthly one, you know, who is functioning in, as a king and a priest to release that blueprint. And God is looking for people. And actually, he's looking for nameless, faceless people who are not known and don't have generally a load of history, but are willing to be obedient to embrace this new order and aren't going to be held back by fear of man and other things, but are willing to be living sacrifices and go for it. You know, and there are people like myself and others whose role is to start calling and releasing those people and releasing blueprints, so that people can embrace them and start forming these things on the earth. You know, and you know, I know people are doing that. I know I've started to do it. I'm calling for alignment, for government to be formed. You know, I'm calling for a release of blueprints, and I'm looking for people who will embrace them and begin to form government. You know, and you know, and then to issue the call to all those displaced people. Hey, this is the sound you're looking for. Yeah. And for some of them, it may well be. You know, and some of them may well be completely freaked out and no idea what you're on about. But something in their spirit will be saying, there's something in this. Something is drawing me. Something is connecting me. Even if it's way beyond my theology or way beyond my understanding, but something is a draw to my spirit, and you know, God will start to do the rest. You know, So, you know, I believe God is looking for those who are willing to stand up and say, yeah, here I am, send me. You know, because as we surrender and we present ourselves in that temple with the seraphim, and there's a sense of there, you know, we get unraveled and get then put into order, and it's like, yeah, God's saying, well, who will go? You know, and it's like, well, yeah, here I am. I'm willing. You know, I may not be skilled, I may not think I've got the expertise, I may not think I've got anything to offer, but actually, if you're willing to receive a blueprint and carry that, then everything else will start to be at work. Because we can get everything we need out of heaven. You know, then you begin to send the angels out to draw the people in. Send them out into the highways and byways with a sound and a frequency to go into people's dreams, to go into people's, you know, visions, and start to draw them. I mean, this is the stuff we have to start doing. You know, we have a totally different dimension to do things now. You know, and we can. You know, but we need to administrate those things. You know, and then you'll find that there will be people who will support. You know, that's part of my role, is to support government coming together and help, you know, in the establishing of these things. Because it needs to be on earth as it is in heaven. And we need a whole load more people who are going to say, yeah, I'm going to be a living sacrifice. I'm willing to take a blueprint. You know, I'm willing to establish it. And for those who feel, yeah, great, I feel totally able to do this. Yeah, I've got all it takes to do this. And yeah, this is my... Those are not the people. God is not looking for those who are confident in their own strength. He's looking for people who actually know that they're totally dependent on God to able to do it. You know, that's why, you know, it won't necessarily be the people that others think. It'll be those that God chooses and appoints. And of course, God is not looking at the externals. He's not looking at your CV. He's not looking at any of that stuff. He's looking at your heart. And he's looking for those who he will be able to say, here is a man or woman after my own heart, who is willing to serve the purpose of God in this generation. And that's what he's looking for. You know, and that's the sound of deep calls to deep that is going out. You know, that's the sound which is reverberating, and that's the sound that people are starting to get connected and drawn to. You know, and that's, for me, is an exciting thing. You know, so I, you know, that's my, you know, I'm looking for that. I'm, you know, doing stuff to see that established as much as I can. You know. So, you know, Andra, if you have a whole load of people who are dispossessed, then you need to go and ask God, is there a blueprint for this? You know, I'm being serious. Just ask him, is there a blueprint for this, for our area?
Yeah, I will do that. I've actually been asked to start some Bible studies, some groups. I don't know if that God called me.
Maybe.
Hey, this is what I'm called to do. Because I certainly don't feel equipped.
Yeah. But you see, what you don't want to do is do something old.
Right.
Don't embrace an old way of, well, I'm going to do a Bible study. Actually, no, encounter God.
Right.
That's the, open up heaven. Step in and engage God. You know, get the angels to be ministering. You know, we have to do things a new way. And that will be, and for some people they'll be like, I don't want anything to do with that. And others will be, I've been looking for this all my life. And those are the people you want. Those are the people who then are going to be, they'll be part of the bench of three that forms. They'll be part of the seven that forms. They will be those who know their call. They may not know much more than you do, but you know, that's why I want to produce the resources to be able to equip churches to be able to transition people and take people from the basics. You know, in a sense, all you have to do is recruit them for a beta group for the Engaging God Manual. And take them through what you're going through.
Yeah.
because you can take them through first principles to embrace it. You know, that's why I'm producing it, to help people and to help groups have something to work through from basic discipleship in these things. You know, yeah, with a vision and a purpose that we're going to be part of what God is doing throughout the earth, but you don't need to know much more than those that are behind. Just have to be a couple of steps ahead to be set in the direction and pointing things. So that would be my encouragement. If there's a group of people who you feel God is calling to connect with, you know, look to see what is it that I need to have to connect them. I mean, you've obviously got a group of people who are going through the transformation series. Well, hey, that's a huge foundation for what's was going to happen. You know, I mean, it's that type of, you know, thing. Some of it is just, okay, what is God saying, and am I willing? Because He will be calling people to do it. He's just looking for willing people who are willing to say, yeah, I'm willing to be that person. I'm willing to be a living sacrifice in this, even though I definitely don't feel equipped.
Yeah.
We don't need to be equipped to the old. You know, was that phrase, I've used it a few times, God would rather have an amateur in the new than a professional in the old. Because He's looking for willing people who He can shape and mold and transform. Not rigid people who want to do it their own way.
Mm, that's good.
Because your blueprint will determine what it looks like. You know, not history. Mm. So, there we go. Anyway.
Thank you. I'm really thanking God on that.
Okay. Yeah.
Mike, one more real quick question. You just put out or made the announcement that the Deep Calls to Faith conference is available.
Yeah.
And I saw that you had 14 sessions. The ones that we have here, we've only got like 9 or 10. I'm wondering where you have that extra session.
It's the same material. Obviously, there's the extra material I did with Andra in her house. There are some sessions which we've split into two because they were two following on things to make it more manageable for people. You know, the largest sessions are still 2 hours, some of them. You know, so, but there's one that was just an exercise, you know, that we did. You know, so you know it's the same basic material. It's just actually put into a sort of a format that is a little bit more accessible for people. So there's nothing different in it, basically. You know, and you've got that material anyway, so you know you don't need it any. You know.
I'm sorry, I have a question. I can't hear Peter.
Pardon? I didn't catch that.
I didn't hear Peter's question because he was echoing
what you asked. All right, yeah. Okay, yeah. Peter just asked about we just sort of put the deep calls to deep conference, the stuff I did at Atlanta in July. We just put it out there because I think it would benefit a lot of people.
Okay.
Because it does sort of really sort of show this whole new order that God is raising up and you know what it's about really. And you know, it's the ideal thing for groups again, you know, who are looking for, you know, what is it? You know, what are we looking for? You know, so yeah, it was just there were a lot more sessions that we put out because we sort of separated some of them into this where I broke for a break in some of the sessions and different things, and yeah, just tried to make them a little more manageable. You know, and you know, we will put out, you know, the one I did at iGate up in Virginia with the Maryland group, as well, because that was different. You know, it was a group of young people who were just looking to start and establish an ecclesia on this format and basis formation. around a blueprint, you know, and they've got some great stuff that they've done in terms of their blueprint diagrams and their vision and values diagram. I mean, lovely, great stuff, you know. And, you know, Sayan, who's part of that, he's going to be in the support group for leaders transitioning, because he's got experience of how you do it from scratch, you know, which is great. And they're a bunch of young people, you know, 24 is the eldest, so, you know, and so the questions and the answers and the different things were very different in that group. So we'll put that out as well sometime once we get around to it. But, yeah. Okay. All right. All right. Okay.